Good morning. Thanks so much for being here with us this morning at 97.1 Wash FM. I'm Lori Brooks, and we're here every morning on every Sunday morning at this same time on Wash FM, honoring women of vision, women who do great things around the world, here in Washington, D.C., for the nation. Doesn't matter. It's making the world a better place to live for you and me. And they're doing it all out of the goodness of their heart. And this morning, we're talking with Robin Thompson. I've talked with Robin before, and her story is just so amazing, and her life is incredible in that she put so much time into this. It's, you know, you wonder that people give up themselves in so much of their lives. And Robin is one of those people. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning, Lori. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. Yourself?
I'm doing great.
Why don't we start from the beginning, if someone didn't hear us a couple of years ago. Tell us your story. Robin runs and created, I guess you're the president and founder of The Art of Driving, which is awareness, responsibility, training. That's what ART, A-R-T, stands for.
That's correct. Back in June of 03, I lost my 16-year-old daughter, Ashley, in a single vehicle crash. And since that time, I started taking a very hard look at how we teach our teens to drive. And needless to say, I'm sure I don't have to tell you or our viewers that, you know, automobile accidents are the leading cause of death for our 15 to 20-year-olds. So I decided something needed to be done. Something needed to change. So I started an educational awareness program for teens and parents and the community at large. And I started it a few months after losing Ashley.
How old was Ashley when she died?
16.
Wow. And how long had she had her license?
Just a few months. She was a new driver. But you know, she was doing well. Ashley was one of those teens that this was the last thing anyone thought would happen. She was grounded. She was responsible. She was an athlete, honor student, you know, that great kid that, you know, every parent's proud to claim and every teacher wants in their classroom. And that's why, you know, when this happened, I thought, oh, my goodness, she was following all the rules. There were no risk factors involved in her accident. And by that, I mean, you know, she wasn't on a cell phone. She wasn't speeding. She had her seatbelt on. No one else was in the car to distract her.
How do you know all that, though?
Well, I worked very closely with the police after the accident. And the first thing I did was, well, first of all, we know she was alone in the vehicle. They could tell just, you know, from the crash reconstruction, they could pretty much figure out the speed she was going. The first responder that actually got to Ashley before anyone else, I met him actually by accident several months later, and he said that when he first got to the vehicle was still running, and he reached in, and yes, her seatbelt was on, and then I asked the police to check her cell phone record because I was trying to figure out what could possibly have distracted her, you know, and caused such a bizarre accident in the way it happened. And, of course, by checking the cell phone records, it was determined that, you know, she was not on the cell phone at the time. So when I put all that together, I thought, you know, this is truly a situation of skill and of experience. And our teens, you know, in many cases are doing fine until something goes wrong, something that they don't know how to handle. And in Ashley's case, something caused her to swerve, which put the car into a skid. She overcorrected. And once she was in that skid, she truly did not know how to maintain control of the vehicle.
Mm.
It's not something that they're taught in our, you know, in our everyday, you know, driver's ed. So after looking at all of that, I decided, you know, we really need to take a hard look at how we're training them, how we're teaching them. And I've worked very hard in trying to get changes into the driver's ed curriculum. And that's been a tough process. We do have the cell phone bill has since been passed that they're not allowed, you know, you're under 18 are not allowed on a cell phone while driving. So, you know, that's a good thing. To me, that's, you know, a no-brainer. And I also think it's important to empower teens. Teens need to realize that they are at risk, and they're very important to each other. You know, teens, their friends are just number one with them. I mean, that's mm-hmm. just where they are, you know, developmentally. So if I can bring them on board and empower them and help them and tell them, you need to be a good friend, you know, keep each other alive. In other words, you know, you're not going to distract one another when you're in a vehicle. You're going to look out for one another. And that's why I started the Teen Task Force. And it's basically run by teens, and it runs very much like any other student club or organization. And it's teens working together to keep each other alive, positive peer pressure, you know, and it's really a great thing, and kids are excited about it. So I'm real excited about some of the things that have been happening. The program is growing, it's expanding, which was what my hope was, and that's why I made the decision that I needed to go nonprofit. If the program was really going to achieve the goals that I had set, I needed to go nonprofit. So I'm actually in the process now of just waiting to get that final word from the IRS. You know, paperwork is in, and I'm just keeping my fingers crossed because there are some things I really would like to see the program be able to achieve.
Well, Robin, what you've done is really quite amazing. I mean, you have taken something from tragedy, turned it around, and you did it quite soon after Ashley died. And that was 5 years ago, right?
It was.
So you sprung into action. That was probably a desire to save your sanity at the time. But looking at that, look at everything you've done. And now you're going from, you know, developing a program. You had a website. The website is evolving. Programs are evolving. You're now becoming a 501c3, what the government calls a nonprofit organization, where you're tax exempt and things like that. So how has that journey been for you, the growth of it? Because I would imagine it's kind of frightening when you first start, and then does it just kind of take you over, or do you steer it in a direction?
Well, you know, originally, you know, Ashley died in June. She was just finishing her sophomore year at Lake Braddock. And that fall, that September or October, I was in the high schools speaking to driver's ed classes, and I originally did it just to go in to talk to the students. I had no, you know, set program per se. It was just telling them my story, and it did. It just evolved, and I decided that out of something so horrific, something good had to come, and that inspiration and motivation, Lori, truly came, I have to be honest, from Ashley. She was such a positive young lady. I mean, that girl's cup was always half full. It truly was. And I thought, you know, the only way to truly honor Ashley and her memory is by doing something positive. And if by me, you know, just keeping one teen alive, then, you know, I've done her proud. And so that's really where my motivation and my inspiration has come. And then I feed off the teens. You know, when I speak to teens and I see their reaction, and they thank me for coming and talking to them, it just, you know, I know it's something I have to keep doing.
Well, teens kind of have that attitude of, you know, that they're invincible. It's not going to happen to me. Mm-hmm. And how many times are we driving down the road? I mean, you know, everybody can be, an equally idiotic driver. But so many times I see that, and it's more and more often it is a young girl. But most of the time it does seem to be the young boys who are doing it. And it's, you think, my gosh, if this child makes it down, you know, 5 miles down the highway, he will be lucky.
Exactly, exactly. And that's why I tell them, you know, the laws, I don't really foresee the laws changing anytime in the near future. So if we've decided that we're going to allow 16-year-olds to have a license, then we need to do a much better job at training them. But we also are going to need to really work with the teens in helping them understand the risks that are involved. And that's why I've taken the approach of more of the positive peer pressure and the teens working with each other because, you know, where they are developmentally, I mean, it's really amazing when you think about it. The brain is not the teen brain. The prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain that governs impulse control, multitasking, judgments, all of those things that they need to be a safe driver, is not, that part of the brain is not developed, fully developed until mid to late 20s, and usually the mid 20s, and with boys a little later. So they're really, I tell the teens, you're not necessarily careless, you're clueless. I mean, this is just an innate problem. So we really have to work at helping them get past that and really drive it home that they are at risk. And because of that, some things need to be in place to help keep them safe. And that means helping each other, looking out for one another. Parents have to come on board with this. I work with parents on my website. There's a whole section for parents that they can go to and get information, get ideas. So it's really everyone coming together to help keep these teens safe. So if we're going to put them on the road, we need to really do a much better job.
Well, if there's scientific evidence that proves there's something that is continuing to this tragedy, because it is, there's so many teens, you know, like you said, it's the number one killer of teens or kids under 20. So why isn't more being done about it? Why aren't our lawmakers responding to this?
That's a very good question, and it's a question I've been asking myself for 5 years. And the times that it has come before any type of law-making body to, for example, increase the driving age, the outcry for that has been very surprising. Lawmakers don't want to do that. Parents have been very much against it.
I remember hearing that a lot of the fast food restaurants really lobbied heavily against it because they would lose a lot of their employees.
Yes. We talked about that actually the last time, you know, that we spoke. And that's very true. And I tell parents, you know, we live in an age of, you know, we want convenience. And I really, stress to them not to fall into what I call the convenience trap of, oh, thank goodness you have a license. You know, you can get yourself to activities, and while you're at it, drop your little brother off at soccer practice. You know, we need to try to rein that in a bit and realize that there's definitely a learning curve here that they first need to go through. The high portion of accidents are in that first 6 months to 1,000 miles after they get a license. So that tells us that they still need the guidance, they still need someone in the vehicle with them, they still need to have those controls and restrictions put on them, very much so. And that's why I stress using a teen parent driving contract, which there is one on my website that parents can download and use. So there's a lot of tools that we can put in place. Knowledge is power. And I think the more knowledge we can get out to the teens, get out to parents, you know, hopefully we'll make a dent in this epidemic. And I do consider it an epidemic. Anytime you're losing 6,000 teens a year, you know, we have that's a national health crisis is the way I look at it. If this was a disease, you know, we would be, you know, we'd have federal funding, we'd have Walks for the Cure. I mean, we would be doing something. So your question is, it was a very good one, Lori. Why, you know, why isn't something more being done for losing 6,000 teens a year on our nation's highways? That's a very good question, and I think it's a question that we all need to ask ourselves.
Do you know how that breaks down, Robin? I don't mean to zing a surprise question on you or anything, but this isn't scripted, by the way, and I don't normally do this, but is maybe half of that or a third of that because of alcohol?
No, actually, that's a very good question. I'm glad you're right. We didn't script this. But, you know, a lot of parents, I think a lot of people in general, under the misconception that alcohol plays a very major factor in this, and it doesn't. It's about 28-29% of fatal teen crashes are due to alcohol. What's going on with the other 70%? 70% of those accidents are due to inexperience, distractions, low use of seatbelt, speed. So the distractions and inexperience are the two leading causes. So, and, you know, we hear about the alcohol all the time, and I'm not saying that that's not something we need to continue working on, because of course we do.
Right.
But I really believe that we need to focus in on what's causing 70% of the accidents. These kids know that they shouldn't drink and drive. I mean, they know that. But we need to work on helping them with that, of course. But we also need to work on what's causing 70% of the accidents. And that's what my program stresses. They know not to drink and drive.
See, I can't believe they're not wearing seatbelts, because they grew up wearing seatbelts.
Particularly the boys. It's very interesting. Actually, more boys, they have this thing about wearing the seatbelts. So again, it's really just, we have to just keep driving it home.
But
parents need to.
But speed, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Robin, but speed, that's what I see. And yes. Speed just too fast around the corner, too fast on the highways. And it seems like they're empowered in a negative fashion when there's somebody with them. You don't often see them driving alone doing crazy stuff, but they're, when they're egged on, or if there's other, you know, friends in the car, it seems like that's when you see them driving very erratically.
Very, very much so. You're absolutely right. And that's why they really should not drive with one another, but that's exactly what they want to do. So that's where parental controls have to come into play. And that's where my teen task force, I'm praying and hoping helps, because I'm telling them, and you know, we talk about designated drivers. I talk about a designated passenger. If you're going to have a passenger, then be a good passenger. You know, help that driver decrease the distractions. You know, don't be distracting. Don't be channel surfing, you know, changing the CDs in the car. If you're have a designated passenger, someone that helps keeps things under control. You know, help keep your friends safe. Going to your friend's funeral is really tough. Ashley's friends to this day have a difficult time. They really do. And graduation day in 2005 at Lake Braddock was really difficult, because someone that they all loved and cared about was missing. So I tell them, you know, get each other to graduation day. You know, be a good friend. And I'm hoping that approach is going to help. At least that's what my prayer is.
Well, what are we not teaching them that they need to know? I can remember I've taken defensive driving courses a couple of times. And they teach you how to steer on a skid pad, what to do on ice, things like that. But you need to do it, I believe. And there's not enough money for that. And I hate to hear that, but that's so true. The government's not going to pay for that.
I know.
So it's up to parents, or do parents go to school and teach their kids, or how does this work?
Well, there's a couple of things, but you're right. It should be part, at least what I've been pushing for, is I feel it needs to be part of the normal curriculum. And it's not, and you're right, it comes back to a money issue. So, however, there are some areas that are doing a much better job than others. There's, you know, one school system in Virginia that their driver's education program is longer. They bus the students to a track, and they get their defensive driving skills. They have simulators in the school, so they have simulator time, which is very important. Research has shown that simulator training is very effective. It helps them particularly with hazard recognition. Studies have shown that our novice drivers, our young drivers, don't recognize hazards and dangers. They're just not there yet, you know. So the simulator training helps with that. So what my program is going to hopefully do is I'd like to start seeing simulator labs put into our schools. And my funding, I'm hoping that will come, is going to help do that. Because you're right, the schools tell me we don't have the funds to bring simulators into our classrooms, but they're very important. And the defensive driving component needs to be the norm, just not for those kids lucky enough whose parents, you know, have the couple hundred dollars to send them. I think we talked last time, you know, every month I'm out at the Youthful Driver Program at the Fairfax County Police run, and I'm their guest speaker each month. And that class has a waiting list. It's full every month of about, you know, 17 to 20 teens who are out there for 8 hours on that track learning defensive driving skills, how to handle a skid, how to handle off-road recovery, and threshold braking, all those things that they are not taught in the normal driver's ed curriculum, and that parents really can't teach them. I mean, unless you're skilled yourself,
right.
where are you going to take them to do it? We're certainly not going to drive down 95 and say, okay, drop two wheels off the side of the road and let me see if you can recover. I mean, we can't do that.
Yeah, not with me in the car.
No, I mean, we need a safe environment, and we need trainers, you know, instructors who are certified to do that. So,
you think we'd have more of these schools?
You would think. There are several popping up, but you're right. They're expensive.
How much do they run?
Roughly, the norm is about $200, $250. The one through Fairfax County, I know, is $200. So, but you know what? When you think about the other things you spend on your child, it's
a pair of tennis shoes.
Right, right. I mean, when you think of what we put into music lessons and sports equipment and that sort of thing, I mean, this is the best money you're ever going to spend. It truly is. And in Ashley's case, you know, she did. She overcorrected for some reason, and she did not know how to handle that skid. It was not in her repertoire of knowledge. She didn't know what to do. And you really have to have that muscle memory. You have to know how that feels.
Right.
Because what you're supposed to do is really counterintuitive to what you want to do in that situation. And I tell the kids, it's not something you can read about. You know, it's a psychomotor skill. You really have to do it and do it repeatedly. So I really feel that if I had known about that, and if Ashley had an opportunity to have some of those skills, you know, the outcome may have been different. But she was a pretty bright young lady. I think she would have used whatever knowledge she had. And like I said, many of our teens do fairly well until they're in a situation that they have not encountered before and they don't know what to do.
I want to get to the contract that you have, Robin, before we run out of time. Where would we find that on the website, which, by the way, is artofdriving.net. That's artofdriving.net, www.artofdriving.net. Where would that be, Robin, on the website?
It's under the it's actually under our program.
Okay.
There's a tab that says our program, drop down, and it says teen driving contract. And it's right there. And it's very easy to use. You sit down, you sit with your team, you discuss, you know, what your expectations are and what the consequences are going to be if they don't, you know, follow your guidelines. Your guidelines, you know, a parent can put tougher restrictions on their team than the graduated driving licensing laws that are out there now, which are great and have been effective. But I tell parents, you know, you can set tighter limits. For example, you know, you set their curfew. You set when they can have the car and when they can't. Who can be with them, if anyone? And I strongly urge that there should be no passengers with your new driver at all, other than, you know, you are a responsible adult. Driving with each other really, really is a risk.
Robin, I was looking on the website, theartofdriving.net, and it's under Take Action, and it will say Teen Parent Driving Contract. And you click on it, and it's got, I mean, your child needs to sign this as well as you.
Yes.
And it makes them accountable for things that they basically promised you. But I think it's a little stronger when it's in writing.
It is. It is. And I had a contract with both Ash and her older brother. Just, you know, stuck up on the refrigerator, there it was, of what, you know, what the expectations are. So I think between having the contract, setting firm limits, getting them some defensive driving skills, and really the biggest thing a parent can do is really spending more time behind the wheel with their teen. Research says they need about 100 hours prior to licensure, and by state law, all they need is 40.
Wow.
But the research says minimum of 100.
And their crash risk is the highest during the first 1,000 miles after they get their license.
Yes. So parents really need to spend more time behind the wheel coaching their teen. And I have some information in there under the parent section on how to coach, you know, the things to do, what to look for, and how to how to help your team when you take them out onto the road. It's really one of the most important things a parent can do is really be involved in that process with your team. This is, I mean, it's a great time to share with your team. It's not the time to get in and discuss, you know, the C they got in science test, but it's the time to get behind the wheel and really talk about driving.
Well, our guest this morning has been Robin Thompson, an incredible woman, mother, teacher, citizen who has created, after the death of her daughter Ashley in a tragic teen driving accident that killed her, Robin created the Art of Driving, and the ART, or rather ART, stands for Awareness, Responsibility, and Training, which is what our teens need if they're going to make it out of being a teenager and into their 20s alive, because it's, Robin has been saying for the past 25 minutes, it can be very dangerous, and you've created so many things to make it a better world for parents who you know, might be able to keep their kids around because they're a little more aware this morning, Robin, so thank you.
Thank you. It's that's my hope.